Digital 410 Productions proudly presents the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast with your hosts, Dodd Abernathy, Jeff Copsetta, and Henry Sledge.
We came to the eastern edge of the airfield and halted in the shade of a scrub thicket. Throwing down our gear, we fell on the deck, sweating, panting, exhausted. I had no more than reached for a canteen when a rifle bullet snapped overhead. "He's close, get down," said an officer. The rifle cracked again. "Sounds like he's right through there a little way," the officer said. "I'll get him," said Howard Neese. "Okay, go ahead, but watch yourself." Neese, a Gloucester veteran, grabbed his rifle and took off into the scrub with the nonchalance of a hunter going after a rabbit in a bush. He angled to one side so as to steal up on the sniper from the rear. We waited a few anxious moments, then heard two M1 shots.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast, your favorite World War II based podcast. I know you're confused, like, wait a minute, it's not Sunday, Don, what happened? Well, life happens, and so here we all are together, hanging out with us from Texas. He returned, prodigal son, Jeff Copsetta, and once again, joining us from Alabama with his new headset, looking like Nancy the Time Life Operator from all the commercials from 1994. If you weren't around then, joke's on you. Henry Sledge, how you doing tonight, Henry?
Doing pretty good, man.
Nah, just the microphone looks great. I was just, every time I see that style of the headset, it reminds me of those old Time Life commercials. And every operator was named Nancy. I don't know why, but that was, "Hi, I'm Nancy, the Time Life operator. And I want to talk to
you. Seventh planet from the sun is called Uranus."
Oh, since we're in such a good mood, I want to take a quick step over. And Jeff, you can join me if you want to. We needed to discuss and take a quick trip to Whiskey Corner real quick. It's been a while since I've had any bourbon on the show tonight because I ran out. But I have a reenactment next weekend. I got a flask I got to fill. But I want to honor this bottle of Larceny weeded bourbon. And you say, "Don, what's so important about this bottle of Larceny weeded bourbon?" I went over to the liquor store down the street. And I walked in and the place smelled horrible. It smelled like rotten liquor. There's glass all over the place. There was piles of Crown Royal bag and broken bottles in the trash can. And I said, "What happened? Somebody throw a fit in here?" And he said, "No, worse. The entire shelf along the right wall collapsed and all the bottles came pouring down on the ground and shattering. And this was the only bottle of Larceny weeded bourbon to survive." And as we were ringing up, I looked at him. I said, "Yeah, it's a shame it couldn't happen to the cheap vodka shelf." He said, "Nope, it was all the scotch and all the whiskey." So basically the most expensive stuff they had in there. So, Steve, if you don't mind, I need to borrow your cup here and just, get the show started right. So we're going to transfer this ice in here. I'm going to pour myself a drink, and we are going to get started. Real quick, how have you guys been?
Apparently not as well as you.
Well, I haven't started yet. We'll see in 25 minutes when I'm slurring my speech and putting out the wrong podcast promo.
Not to discuss anything controversial, but let me tell you something.
That's on my other podcast. You want to hear the controversial stuff, you got to go to D-410 and listen to the What's Your Head podcast.
I don't want to hear it. Jeff, I'm glad you're back.
Yeah, we were talking about that, and then Don, you know, rudely interrupted us with, you know, the beginning of this episode. But it feels like it's been too long, you know, since we've all been together, or like Henry likes to refer to it as our threesome.
Yeah, that was a bad choice of words.
Hey, it's 2021. You can't question. You just gotta let it roll.
But yeah, it's good to be here, and yeah, I can't wait to hear Don start, you know, slurring his words. He'll be Dan Abernathy with Digital 10-4 Productions and everything.
Well,
it'll be good.
As those of the keen eye can see, my last name's misspelled on Zoom. Every time I start a new meeting, if I don't go in there and fix it, it's misspelled. And at this point, I just don't care.
Realized that.
Yeah. It's been misspelled since day one. So, Jeff, you were busy last couple of weekends. You kind of got an early start on me as far as the living history season goes, because you and I, we live in hot-ass climates. And so when the rest of the While the rest of the nation is doing all the reenactments in spring and summertime, me being in Florida and you being in Texas, it's like, no, it's too hot for wool. Too hot. We wait until the wintertime and the fall. And so you've got a head start on me. Last week, you went down to, actually, you've done a few things. Why don't you share with the audience the cool stuff you've been doing and the great photos that people can see on your Instagram page?
Yeah. Well, like you said, I got a head start on you because I'm the one-up guy and I didn't want to be Trump biased. So that's number one. We here in the beautiful little town of Vernon, Texas, there's a lot of uniqueness around here for a lot of reasons. You know, the history, we're the blue bonnet capital of Texas, you know, a little blue flower, people come from all over the world to see in the springtime. Geologically, we're very unique. And one of the things, one of my favorite things about this town is we have what's called the Austin Steam Train Association that comes up from Austin. It was an actual steam powered engine, you know, built about 100 years ago. Right now, they're having to use more of a modernized diesel from the early 60s while the steam engine is being repaired. But it brings up, 300 to 350 people into Burnet every Saturday. It's about a 2-hour trip from Austin up to Burnet. And all of the cars now are all streamlined. Parlor cars. They've got I don't want to say a diner, but more like a concession car, and some really nice coaches, you know, streamlined coaches that are all climate controlled now. All, you know, all the brushed, you know, silver polished aluminum coaches you saw from the 30s and 40s. They've got about a dozen of them or so. So, and I used to do a lot of stuff with them. They're a great nonprofit. We've done some fundraisers with them before and some of the other organizations I've been a part of. And I just kind of said, hey, you know, I've been, when the museum here was closed in COVID, I thought, well, I can go out, set up a table or two, bring my old car out and meet them right when they got off the train at the depot. They could see some artifacts. I could hand out some brochures and say, hey, when the museum opens, come back and see us, you know, because they're only in town for about 2 hours. So you got enough time to eat lunch, buy some overpriced antiques and burn it, and then take the train home.
Well, let's be honest. So, if they're not overpriced, they're not antiques.
That's right. Exactly. So I just happened to ask, hey, you know, we're a couple of us dressed up. Would you mind if we hop the train next Saturday, bring some other stuff and do a photo shoot? And they said, oh, my gosh, absolutely. Just, you know, sharing the advertising, tag us or whatever. So I did that. And now that's leading to an idea I'm trying to put together. You know, a buddy of mine who we're going to have on the show here pretty soon has done that Troops and Trains program that the Strasburg Railroad does up in Pennsylvania. Now, I've ridden that train, but not that program. And that's a strictly, it's not open to the public. It's apparently it's strictly for reenactors to ride a train, all World War II, all 1940s menu on the cars.
That's awesome.
1940s music. Then they get off somewhere and have like a big hangar dance. I wanted to kind of do something like that here, but something open to the public. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Batfish, which is a sub up, that's a World War II submarine up in Oklahoma. I know some guys who reenact on it. Once you go inside of a sub, you don't know if you're in the middle of a grassy field in Oklahoma or underwater.
Sure.
So basically they open it up, I think it's a couple times a year, and people actually get to go in the submarine and see all these reenactors at their battle stations, you know, as if the sub was underwater in World War II. So I want to develop a program like that in this train car. I'm going to try to work a deal where they'll just drop the car off here and burn it, leave it for a week. And, you know, they're going to have a conductor up here to help me do the program. They have to have a representative, obviously, to open the car and reliability and everything. But, you know, talk a little bit about train travel in World War II, how important it was, the history of that particular car. Because, like I said, all these cars are pushing 90, 100 years old. And then when people go in the car, it opens up into this everybody's first person. You know, I went 12, 15 reenactors in there sitting, and it's kind of a parlor car. So there's some sleeping quarters. There's like some dorms with the beds that fold down. And then, so it's like a real narrow walkway. And then it opens up and there's like a coffee bar. I think they had like a little ice cream machine there and a couple tables and chairs, you know, by the windows there. So it's just a beautiful setting for people to kind of come in and see what it, basically walk on a train car as if it was going down the tracks during World War II. So I'm mentioning that because I'd love to get some reenactors, you know, that would be interested in that. You don't have to do much. You just kind of got to know what you're wearing, who you're representing, and be able to kind of have a conversation with guys. Nothing scripted, really. You know, nothing like that. Just have conversations. Guys talking about, oh, yeah, flying over New Guinea. Oh, man, yeah, oh, Black Alley over here, you know, whatever. So that's what I was trying to do. And then, of course, this past Saturday, Pumpkins and Paratroopers was just basically
Before you go to that, I want to stop on your train thing. One of the cool things that would be the cool thing to do, obviously, have a couple of people portraying vets coming back from overseas and telling those stories, but maybe get one or two of the younger guys because of being on the train and the time of the country. It would be cool. Obviously, you wouldn't have to have it scripted, but they can kind of improv some stuff, give them a baseline. Hey, you're from Oklahoma. You're from Alabama. And they could talk about how this is the first, not only is it the first time on the train, but the first time they've ever left home, because most of those cats had never left their small towns before joining the service and getting on the train and traveling across the country. And they could kind of talk about the experiences they've had and the things they've seen, how they never realized how big the country was and things like that. And so that'd be something kind of cool too. Not only have the guys coming back from overseas, but having the replacements going out for the first time who just got through boot camp. And now this is their first time seeing our country.
I think that's a great part for Henry. Yeah. I don't think he's ever left Alabama. I don't know.
No, Henry's a world traveler.
Yeah, I don't even know how to drive a car, so.
Still, he still rolls down the street. He doesn't like the possum. He rolls everywhere in his lawn tractor.
Anyway, so yeah, so just finished up a nice little fall program here at the Highland Lakes Air Museum. I don't know. We saw about 100 or so people. Kids came out, decorated pumpkins, had a lot of fun, handed out some dog tags for prizes, custom made, you know, that said Pumpkins, Paratroopers, First Place, whatever.
Oh, that's cool.
Had AirVac land for us, and it's really going to be a good segue coming into December. We're going to put together a real nice Pearl Harbor commemorative program, but it's going to be kind of first responder centric. And I may have mentioned that on this podcast before, but I want to do kind of it's a somber day. You know, December 7, 1941. But, you know, I think we stand to make the argument that that's the day that this country got its identity. Mm-hmm. That's the day that we became who we are. That's the day that America emerged as what it is today. And thanks to people like Henry's dad and you know, 60 million other men and women that wore the uniform, because if not for that, who knows? So it's tough to celebrate on a day like that. Because it is such a somber time. It was, you know, such an emotional time for America. It was such a time of so much uncertainty. And people don't realize that, because we always look back because we know we won the war. But if you really, truly step back into that weekend in early December of 41, you know, we're ranked 17th in the world militarily. Guys are training with broomsticks for machine guns. I mean, we're not there. We are not. There is no way. Statistically, we should have won that war in 1941 when we entered. There was just no way. But obviously, we pulled it off. So I want to do a celebration. I want to get past, you know, pulling on those heartstrings. Let's celebrate the men and women who inherently have the risk every day they put on the uniform, that could be the day that the world changes, that their life ends, that they have to take a life, whatever it is. They need to be celebrated, and that's what I want to do here coming up in December. So it's going to be a great time for people to dress up, have some barbecue, have some live 40s music, you know, out here in the hangar. It's all going to be inside, so I don't care what the weather's going to do. And enjoy, come see some of our airplanes and meet some of our local, you know, law enforcement, EMS, and fire. And I think AirVac is going to land again. So, yeah, a lot of good stuff going on.
Sounds like a good time. And I like the idea of trying to bring more awareness to the importance, more than just Pearl Harbor was attacked, these ships are sunk, you know, this is what started a war. I actually dig down deep down into it a little bit and try to bring up that awareness of, you know, the impact. And as you said before, you know, the fact that, you know, we shouldn't have won the war. We had a lot of things going for us. In the realm of enemies, one, ego, two, lack of communication. As we talked with Guadalcanal campaign, how it was kind of put together on a shoestring budget. Thank God the Japanese Navy and Army didn't communicate amongst each other, or they would have had a better job at maybe winning that campaign. As Henry and I discussed last week, Operation Market Garden, that thing was
right.
voted on, put together, and implemented in 7 days. They basically came up with it on the 19th, 20th, and started on the 27th. And we kind of got into the airborne stuff last week, and I think we'll get into a little bit more. I just want to give a little update for those listening last week. We did a good 20 minutes or so on Operation Market Garden because I honestly only really know about it for what they say about it in Band of Brothers and, you know, a few other shows I've seen here and there. But if you watch from Band of Brothers, you would think that things didn't really get bad until the boots were on the ground, right? They're, oh, it was a great jump, landing in soft fields. Well, reading September Hope, I came across some stats. Obviously, this book's about the 82nd, the 101st, the Red Devils, and the Polish. But as far as 101st Airborne goes, going with the stuff that Henry's been reading on Band of Brothers, here is before the campaign kicked off on the ground. Here's just some numbers. Let me see, blah, blah, blah. Of the 70 gliders that comprised of the 201st Airborne serials, 53 made it to the landing zone. Three aborted over England, one ditched in the channel, two went down in Belgium. The rest were shot down or released in various spots before the landing zone. 53 gliders that made the landing zone unloaded 32 Jeeps, 13 trailers, 252 troopers. The better part of two American Airborne divisions were now on the ground. So once again, out of 70 gliders that left for Operation Market Garden, just for 101st Airborne, this isn't 82nd, the Red Devils, or the Polish. Out of those 70 gliders, 53 of them landed. But if you're watching Band of Brothers, you think, oh, the flight over, no flak, no interference. Things didn't get crazy until the boots hit the ground. But as you just heard, quite a few of the gliders that didn't suffer from malfunctions actually were shot down, and so were some of the planes. And so, you know, reading this book, you really, you know, you kind of get a true glimpse into how it was pretty touch and go from the time that they got over enemy territory until we had to have the very first, you know, fallback session, as Dick Winters and them point out in Band of Brothers, the first time they've ever actually had the retreat. And maybe the fact that they did put this thing together in 7 days is a testament to what caused it to fail, just because, and as we discussed last week, the original drop zone for the 101st Airborne, they were going to be responsible for 30 miles. And at the last minute, they got Montgomery to agree to 15. So if you can just imagine, you know, the battalions of the 101st trying to cover 30 miles of area, it's just, the whole thing was just so, you know, hopeful that it works, but in reading this book, a lot of the commanders and a lot of the heads, you know, Sink and the other guys, after having their initial meeting with Montgomery and the organizers, they kind of left that meeting like, this operation is going to be a bloodbath. And so they kind of went into it knowing that they were sort of destined to fail. And so it's always interesting because obviously, as we discussed, on miniseries like that, when they're doing a book, they can't cover all in depth all of the stuff. But yeah, it's just interesting to see how Operation Market Garden was put together and the level of hurt that these guys ran into on the way.
That's one thing, you know, and I love Band of Brothers. I actually just got through the Bastogne parts. I'm on the last patrol as of a couple of nights ago, but to everything you're saying, man, Market Garden, I mean, nothing against the way Band of Brothers portrayed it, but that's the limitations of a 10-part mm-hmm. film. They can't do it all. But, I mean, as I'm reading Garnier and Heffron's book, Brothers in Battle, Best of Friends.
Yep.
Going through that book, the Holland stuff was like, I mean, I think Garnier said they went like 72 days without a shower.
Yeah. And even in this, they talk about Heffron takes shrapnel right during the Holland campaign. And yeah, it's just the obviously, we've heard of Hell's Highway. We know it was a rough battle.